Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome, with a Farm Bureau welcome, to Commander Roik Denver. Roik.
Thank you. I mean, there's nothing worse than a standing ovation to start. I mean, literally, unless at the end of this thing somebody takes their shirt off, the best I do is break even. But I appreciate it. You know, one of the very first speaking events I did when I came off active duty in the Navy was actually for a large ag company. And as I was kind of preparing my remarks, I was trying to figure out exactly, okay, how do I connect the dots between what I do and what they do, and was working through that. And it was interesting. Right as I was about to walk up on stage is when it hit me that we have this covenant, farmers and warriors. You see, I've been to every nasty spot this world has to offer. Central and South America, East and West Africa, Iraq, Afghanistan. And something's real interesting about the cultures in those parts of the world, and that's this. When people are hungry, they go to war. They start killing each other. They start killing everybody around them. And so here's the deal. If you do your job, I don't have to do my job, which is totally fine by me. I got a beautiful bride and a couple littles at home I like spending time with. The other thing about farmers and warriors, I feel like everybody tries to tell us how to do our job, very few of whom actually do the job. So I get it, but let's keep that covenant together. You guys do your job, I won't have to do mine, and the world will stay right. But we'll be ready just in case people get hungry. Who knows, let me also say this. Thank you, Bob Stallman. Thank you, the rest of the family that's taking care of me the past couple days just getting set up for this thing. I really appreciate it. It's been genuine hospitality, and I thank you for that. Who knows what this, I know it says what this is, but who knows what this bell's for? Somebody can just say it. What's this bell for? Ringing out. So about 75 to 80% of the young lions that show up at SEAL training don't see the finish line. Almost all do so of their own volition. That somewhere in training, they say, I've never been this cold, wet, and miserable in my life. I am out of here, and they quit. So they got to walk over to this bell. They got to ring it three times. We don't do that to embarrass a young lion, sincerely. We do that to make sure they understand, hey, this program is as hard as you thought it was going to be. This program is as hard as we want it to be, and it's not for you, at least at this time. So they got to ring that bell three times, and they put their helmet down. It's got your name on it, your class number on it. And it's just this very special tradition that's part of our brotherhood. I'd like to explain that right at the beginning because I want to know that everyone here to know that the quitting policy is in effect. So if things get too challenging today, spiritually, emotionally, physically, I want you to know that you can tap out. You can ring out. Just raise your hand, say, Commander Denver, had enough. I can't do it. Y'all walk up to the front of the room here. I'm going to look you in the eye, make sure you got your head on right, and then. We don't have a bell, so you got to, tap on the counter or something. I'll let you tap on the microphone. And then, since you don't have helmets, you got to take off a piece of clothing. You can lay it down right here, and then you're free to go. Okay, that's how it's going to work for the day, all right? Okay. People ask me all the time, what is it you think that separates SEALs from other combat units on the battlefield, friendly and foe? And it really is the training. It's the training we use to select the young lions into the brotherhoods, the training we use to kind of prepare them once they make it to the teams to face the challenges and solve the problems that we'll ask them to solve on the battlefield. And so I've got a video that I'm going to play next of our training. It shows you a little glimpse of what we do, not a mile and a half that way from where we're sitting right now. But since I used to run the training for the SEALs, and I used to have thousands of young lions every year yelling out and cheering, ready to fight the program and working hard, I wouldn't feel right if we all watched a bunch of SEAL training at a resting heart rate. So to that end, on your feet. Everybody that can stand, at least get up. Yeah. So this is what we're going to do, and by we, I mean you. I'm going to ask you to do one of the exercises I used to put the young lions through in excess of about 3,000 repetitions. But I'm only going to ask you to do it three times, okay? I think that's fair. The reason I love this exercise is its simplicity. All I'm going to ask you to do is jump. And I don't mean a jumping jack, just a jump. This is not what I mean by a jump. Like, my feet didn't, leave the ground. That's embarrassing. I just did that as an example. But a jump. And we're going to do it in a military fashion. So I'm going to say ready, and I want to hear a loud and thunderous ready, so I know that you're ready. And then I'm going to say up. And in unison, you're going to jump. When you land, you're going to count off the repetition. So you're going to count off one. And then I'm going to say up again, and you're going to count. Bingo. All the private equity guys, when I do these events, can't figure that out. And then I'm going to say up one more time, and when you land, you're going to count three, okay? So I'm going to say ready, loud and thunderous, ready. I'm going to say up, it's time to jump. The only disclaimer for the day, if you got a bad back, bad hips, bad knees, like you saw your doctor on Friday and he said, Bob, everything's looking good. Only thing that's going to throw you into cardiac arrest is if you jump three times in the next week. Don't jump, if that's the case. Okay. All right. Ready?
Ready.
Up.
Up.
Up. Up.
Two.
Awesome. 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 Everybody sit except the first three rows. Oh, yeah. You're sitting in the first row. They're like, that's what I'm talking about, Mom. You sit in the front of the class and get picked by the teacher, and the teacher's a lunatic SEAL. I only say this. This is what attrition looks like in the SEALs. We got a bunch of people that start, and this very small number of physically fit, capable people make it to the finish line. So congratulations. Take your seats. Let's look at a little training. That's happening about 2 miles as the crow flies that way as we speak. The boys are going through it. And it really is the training. I mean, that's the thing that separates us. I love talking about training because I feel like this is the one thing that we all utterly control, right? I mean, what the alchemy of traits that you were born into this world with, that God gave you, that's pretty fixed. But what you train to, what you discipline yourself towards, that's who you become. That's what you become. And so in the SEALs, we really focus on training. That is what makes the difference on the battlefield. And we do so to such high levels of repetition that things become extensions of your body. Shooting is one of those things. I mean, our guys can shoot the eye out of a bird flying. And we do it so much so we can get to this place where you don't need to think about it. I'll give an example. I need one hand that I need one person to shoot, basically. I need a target. Who can I shoot? I need one hand. It's the best. This is the best. What you don't see, I get to see it every time, is every time in the audience, someone's like, shoot him. You can't see it. But I know who you are. You know, okay, yeah. Yeah, so, all right, who can I get? I need somebody, see, somebody's pointing at you, sir. You don't even know it. Do you stand for me? Yeah. Stand up. I don't want to shoot you sitting down. So let's say this is my target, right? And so we practice at these battle training facilities to be able to shoot at a high level of competency. Let's say I come around the corner. I've got my primary battle rifle. I bring that up, and this is my target. As I pull the trigger, instead of bang, my gun goes click. This is a big problem. But we practice for that. We train for that possibility. So I go into what's called a transition drill. So my primary goes click. I transition to my secondary. So my primary battle rifle goes down. I've got a pistol on my side. As soon as I bring that down, I clear the holster. I'm not super accurate from right here, but you'd at least know I was shooting at you. And then I go through a very disciplined repetition of what I say every time I shoot so I can do it the same every time I shoot. And so as I bring that weapon up to bear, I have this mantra, and I say sight, slack, squeeze. Sight, slack, squeeze. Sight means I'm looking at the front side of my pistol. I can keep my target blurred out because my brain will compensate. Slack means I'm taking slack out of the trigger so I can get to a smooth muzzle break. Squeeze just lets me follow through. Bang, bang. I wouldn't miss from here. You gotta sit down. Yeah. Clear right, clear left, all clear, and then figure out what's going on with my rifle. Thank you. So training, right? No matter what it is, no matter what industry or group of folks I'm talking to, training in my mind makes a difference. And so you got to figure out what that is for you. Find that thing you can train to get yourself to another level, and then you get to constantly improve. That's the next part that I think we focus on the SEAL teams at a very high level, and that's how do you constantly improve in the elite environment, right? You're already performing at a high level. How do you get better and constantly do that? And I've got an example I think helps illustrate this point. You don't need to get up this time, but everybody just sit in their seats, put both hands over your head, kind of reach it towards the ceiling like, you know, a bank robber sticking you up or something. Perfect, perfect. Keep them up. Keep them up. All right. Loosen up your back a little bit. Roll your shoulders. Get your hands straight up, all the way up. Keep them there. Now watch this. Everybody give me one more inch. Oh, it's awesome. Put your hands down. At some point, this is going to fail. Like, I'm going to be training ninjas, and I'm going to say, reach as high as you can, and they're going to, and then I'm going to say, give me another inch, and they're not going to move, and it's going to be a really awkward moment for me. But so far, I'm batting 1,000 on this concept. And what I think's happening is, I think we keep a little something extra in the tanks for when you really need it. I think that inch that everybody just got when I asked of it is that opportunity to constantly improve in the elite environment. And you need to kind of figure out what that means to you. I think, you know, sometimes you can find an inch every week. Sometimes you're going to find an inch a year. But I think if you do that, I think if you look at, okay, where can I claw and scratch and fight for an inch, you're going to get better constantly. And my guys got to know this almost to the point of where it made them a crazy person. But my guys, I knew it had connected when my guys every once would say, hey boss, I found an inch. This is how we can do better by setting up the truck this way. This is how we can do better when we set up our communications gear and so on. It's a secret. It's a secret. Please find that inch. I think you're going to get better all the time. All right, this is the SEAL battle cry, hoo-yah. It's interesting because every warrior culture for millennia has had some battle cry to prepare them for the field and to charge the enemy. In the U.S. military, it's neat because the battle cry is the exact same word, it just sounds different. And people, I already hear laughter, so people know what I'm talking about. So if you're in the Army, it's almost as if everyone in the Army is from the South, or like the Deep South, sounds like this. Hoo, Sergeant, hoo, that's the way they say that. If there's a Marine in the room, give me a bark. Oorah, or junkyard type dog bark. Spelled the same, sounds like a junkyard dog. Now I think SEALs are like the most literal people on earth, so I'm embarrassed because we just say hoo-ya, which is what it looks like to me. But anyway, I used to hear the young lions scream this every day, thousands of times, but it's fun to get a hoo-ya. It kind of fires me up, so I'm going to ask for a hoo-ya. I'm going to count to three. I want to point out at the audience. I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, and I want a loud and thunderous hoo-ya. And this is what I'm talking obnoxiously loud. That's how loud I want you to yell hoo-ya in unison. Like someone's coming to this convention center, they're going to hear this and be like, nope, we're going to go see something else today. I don't even want to go inside that building. Like that level loud, okay? All right. 1, 2, 3.
Hoo-ya!
That is a legit hoo-ya. We might have just broke something. So I love talking about leadership. I mean, one of the things, my job in the Navy was, as an officer, was to lead the troops. It was not to be the best shooter. It was not to be the best diver. It was to make sure all my guys were doing their job well. So I love talking about leadership, and I think we're all leaders in whatever sphere of the world we control. So I wrote a book about 2 years ago called Damn Few, and it's about SEAL training. It's about what we believe in and what we care about. And you know, when you write a book, you try and get somebody, the most high-profile person you can find on earth, to write a blurb for you, right? And you try and get them to say completely inaccurate things about you so people will buy your book. So I got this guy, Stephen Pressfield, who wrote this book, Gates of Fire. He also wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance, a bunch of other amazing kind of warrior classics. But there's an interesting passage in this book. It's about the 300 Spartans at Thermopylae. I think a lot of people know this story now because the movie's 300. I see people nodding. If you don't know this story, just to make sure I don't lose anybody, we're in ancient Greece. A million-plus man Persian army is descending on Greece, has subjugated most of the known world, and the Spartans are the warrior culture that the rest of the free world is hoping will repel these invaders. The Spartans don't have time to bring their entire corps, battle corps, to bear, so they send 300 of their finest to a choke point to hold up this Persian emperor as long as they can. Every Spartan that was sent knew it was a suicide mission. And in their culture, that was okay. And it proved true. But they held up this Persian emperor so long that when the battle was over, they found one. In this book, it's a novel with a lot of historical accuracy, but in this book, there's basically this Persian emperor finds one squire of the Spartan army alive. And he throws his surgeons at him, keep him alive. He says, I want to interview him, keep him alive. And then this book is kind of the conversations between this Spartan squire and the Persian emperor, the conqueror. And there's one passage where the emperor asks the squire about the Spartan king. Because of all the cultures he had beat and defeated on the battlefield, he'd never seen anything like the Spartan king. The Spartan king was on the front line, shoulder to shoulder with his troops for the first wave of assault. Never had he seen this before. Always the kings were in the rear, sitting under shade, watching the battle unfold. So this is the description of the Spartan king from the Spartan squire to this Persian emperor. This Persian knew now it just took 7 days to beat 300 of these guys. What's it going to take to beat 20,000 of them when we go to the main battle? But in leadership, this is one of the best passages I've ever heard in my life about that subject. Squire talking about the Spartan king to the Persian emperor. I will tell his majesty what a king does. A king does not abide within his tent while his men bleed and die upon the field. A king does not dine while his men go hungry, nor sleep when they stand watch upon the wall. A king does not command his loyalty through fear, nor purchase it with gold. He earns their love by the sweat of his own back and the pains he endures for their sake. That which comprises the harshest burden, a king lifts first and sets down last. A king does not require service of those he lead, but provides it to them. He serves them, not they him. I'm telling you right now, I love warrior culture. I love leadership, and there's a lot of books about it, and I'm kind of working on a leadership book right now. But if you understand what I just read, if you understand that the higher you go up the flagpole, the higher you go up the chain of command, or just if you're in the senior position in your family, that means the more people you are now in service to, there's nothing else you need to know about leadership. If it's the opposite, if you think the more, you know, seniority you get and the higher up you go, now more people work for you and serve you, I assure you, you're blowing it. You might not know it, but I guarantee you, your troops know it. Keep that in mind. Keep that service to your people in mind constantly, and there's nothing else you need to know about leadership. It's one of the true secrets. One of the true secrets. You know, I'm actually going to skip by this picture. This picture was my original example when I started talking about leadership, and this is at one of Saddam's palaces in Iraq, and it's kind of this horrific story that maybe I'll talk to somebody about afterwards. But I wanted to find a good example about leadership. That's why I kind of shifted to this press field coat. But people ask me all the time, what's the... Oh, wait. That used to just happen on a regular Tuesday in my last job, and I can't start flying first class to all these cushy locations to get soft, so I just put that in there to remind me of my last gig. That has no talking point whatsoever for you. That's the only reason I put that in there. Well, people ask me all the time, what's the number one thing you learned in SEAL training? What's the best thing you learned in SEAL training? Now, granted, this is usually an 18-year-old young man or younger that wants to know how to turn a spoon into a deadly weapon, which I can actually talk to in great detail, but is not the number one thing I learned in SEAL training. But this is what I learned. About a week before I graduated from the basic course, the basic course of instruction right down the street, we have what's called a FTX, a final training exercise, a final battle problem. And it's your graduation exam. So the instructors give you a mission. You got to kind of research it, plan it, brief it, get it accepted, then rehearse it, and go execute that mission. And everything in the military is based on time, right? Everything's based on time. If you say you're going to be somewhere for a hit hour or a rally point, you got to be there. Because other units, other sister and friendly forces are counting on you to be where you say you're going to be. And we were late as we were planning this mission. We were behind. And you don't need to be behind or fail at SEAL training to have it turn into a horrific day of training. And I remember the senior officer in the class, the senior student in the class, is running around this compound trying to get everybody fired up and is losing his, like the Tasmanian devil, just screaming at everybody. We got to make sure the gun trucks are ready. Does everybody have their ammunition? Do we have the navigation set? I mean, just losing his mind. And I remember it just had this high-level intensity there, and it seemed like it wasn't sustainable. And this Master Chief Petty Officer, I don't know how many people know the ranks of the U.S. military, but a Master Chief Petty Officer in the Navy is the highest-ranking enlisted man in the service. They are like gods at basic training. And this guy was right out of Central Casting. Huge barrel chest, tattoo of Poseidon on this arm, an anchor on this side, Magnum PI mustache, the original reflective Oakley sunglasses. Remember those football coaching shorts that were very much too tight, made by Russell or something like that? He's wearing those. Awkward looking at the time, but we thought it was pretty cool at that moment. I remember he comes walking out on the deck overlooking all the officers. He said, "All the officers, get over here." And we think we're dead. I mean, this is it. We're dead. So the five officers in the class go running over to this master chief, and he says, "Take a knee." And I remember we take a knee in front of him. This guy used to carry a broadsword on his back. This is not a modern weapon. But he carried a broadsword on his back constantly through training. And I remember taking a knee. I was like, yep, this is how it ends. This is how you get somebody takes a knee. You can lop two or three of their heads off at the same time. I don't even make it to SEAL teams. I don't even get into combat. He says, pay attention, gents, because I'm going to teach you the number one thing I learned in SEAL training. And so now we think we might survive the moment. He said, in this job, gentlemen, the only job as officers we need you to do is to lead. That's it. Don't need you to do it. You just need to lead. You need to lead the boys. And he said, based on our guys, at a minimum, they're going to mimic your behavior. When they see you, when you see you doing what you do, they're going to mimic at a minimum your behavior. Most likely, based on this kind of personality type that comes to this job, they're going to amplify your behavior. So if you're keeping it together, they'll keep it together. And if you're losing it, they're going to lose it. He said, prepare to copy. And that means it's time to write something down. So we all take out a pencil and a piece of paper, and he says, this is the best thing I learned in SEAL training. And this is all he says. Calm is contagious. Calm is contagious. He says, beat it, which means to run away as fast as possibly can. So we start running away, but as I'm running away, I hear him in the background say, because in our line of work, gents, if you keep your head, you keep your head, which is a really good exclamation point to a teaching point. Calm is contagious. So I got one more video that I'm going to play for you because it's interesting. In 14 years of active service, I have never seen calm is contagious proven false. And the awesome thing is you can supplant any word you want for calm. Chaos is contagious, panic contagious, stupid 100% contagious. So we like calm because it allows you to focus on the job at hand when you need to do it in its most intense moment. So I got one more video for you. This is my calm is contagious. You're going to hear me and a couple of my buddies yelling. That's just because guns are really loud, as I know many of you know. Calm is contagious.
Sir, what's the status on those folks?
I lost whiplash on the run. Told him you hit the target early. They're coming in hot.
I got no pulse.
Contact rear!
Is contagious. A lot of people don't know that was live fire coming off those boats when we filmed that scene. That was live fire coming out of those miniguns. It was funny as we're getting ready to film the first scene in that river that there's a cameraman that was with us. It's like one of the top cameramen in Hollywood if it's in the water. I mean, if it's in the water, he's the guy. And I remember we're standing on the shore of the river. This is in Louisiana, out of Stennis, if there's any folks from that part of the world. Yep, I see hands up. And it's funny as we're getting ready to swim out in the water, he says, so these guys are going to be shooting real bullets at us? I said, well, they're not going to be shooting at us, but they're going to be shooting over us. And he said, you're okay with that? And I said, they haven't hit us yet. We'll see what happens. And so I remember we swim out, we do the scene, and then we got to film it a second time. And I remember we're on the shore, and this guy is nowhere to be found. I'm like, man, that guy must be taking a break. I'm sure he'll be out here in a second. Then we see him down the beach with, like, this telephoto lens. He said, I got all the footage I needed on the first run. You guys are good. Go on without me. He wanted nothing to do with getting back in that water. You know, it's funny. So I got a countdown. You can't see it, but I got a countdown clock. It gives me my time. It's funny. My last gig, if I saw a clock counting down, I'd get one of my explosive extra. I'd be like, I'll stand over here while you figure out what wire you want to cut. But it's always a little disconcerting when I see the clock counting down. But, that very first time I did one of these speaking events, I really didn't know how I wanted to close, how I wanted to, finish the event. And right before I took the stage, I kind of had in mind a joke. I'd tell a joke, and it's hard to beat laughter. But right as I'm about to go up on stage, I get a little chime that comes into my phone right before I turned it off. And one of my buddies had just sent me a text that two of our teammates had just been killed in Afghanistan the night before. One was a good buddy of mine. The other one was, you know, a man I knew well. I knew his family well. And it was a very sobering experience. I'm about to talk about what we do and hopefully share some of the lessons from our world that would hopefully translate to someone else's world. And it kind of refocused my thoughts. And this is what it made me think of. There's only two reasons a SEAL will ever be off base in uniform. Okay, there's only two reasons we leave in uniform. One is to attend a wedding, to celebrate that moment with a friend and a teammate, and that's an awesome reason to be in uniform. And the other reason is to attend a funeral. And I've been to far too many funerals in the last decade. I have no idea how many funerals I've been to in the last decade. But it's interesting because every time I've been in uniform and I've been off base, I have almost had my back bruised with people patting me on my back, thanking me for my service. It is an unbelievable time to be a warrior in this country. And there's people in this room that probably came back from a very different war to a very different reception, which is a breach of a national trust I can't even wrap my head around. But I'm telling you, it's special to be serving right now. And so it occurred to me this is an opportunity to return that favor. Since everybody's always thanking me for my service, it gives me an opportunity when I have the microphone to thank you for your service. I mean this sincerely. I thank you for what you do for this country. I'm telling you, if it wasn't families and people like you giving us something to fight for in this country, there would be zero reason for me to wake up in the middle of the night to have that pager go off and to kiss my bride and my littles goodbye and go chase our nation's enemies. And this is a family affair. I mean, I said about that covenant between warriors and farmers. This is a family affair, and I can prove it. I had the good sense, even growing up in California, to marry a beautiful gal from Kentucky. And her best friend and maid of honor's parents are sitting right over there. So Luann and Joe Paul, love you. Thank you for being here. So this is family. This is family today. But I thank you for your service. I thank you for giving us something to fight for. If I can be of service to any of you in the future, please call on me. And I really appreciate the time. Thank you. Thank you.